This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's time to talk football with our friend Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick Six podcast moderator. I do not know, because it's been a crazy morning, Will. Did you heed my call for a special emergency Pick Six podcast after the 49ers and Cowboys were through? I don't even care about the last game. We knew that was going to be a blowout. I needed an emergency Pick Six podcast right after 49ers and Cowboys were done. Did you do it?
No, we did not do the emergency podcast, but we probably should have just started up and fired up and skipped the Steelers Chiefs. I somehow talked myself into believing that the Big Ben narrative was going to weasel its way into a Steelers cover, maybe the Steelers win. The Sunday before, I had said, man, when the Lions came out, I was like, I love the Chiefs in this spot.
And I then did.
Allowed myself to be, I allowed my, I went 3-2 in my playoff picks. I should have been 5-0 because I got caught up in the Patriots narrative and the Steelers narrative. And it was just very clear that, you know, the two teams they were playing against, the Bills and the Chiefs, just substantially better. As far as the Cowboys and the 49ers go, I mean, it's not, I don't want to say what a finish,
yeah,
because what a finish implies that it seems to imply a high level of execution by people to close out a football game. And that's not what that was.
Here's the question that I asked Twitter, and I'll ask of you. Was that the greatest fourth quarter in NFL history for abysmal NFL coaching decisions?
It's probably up there, given the stakes.
Because I think both teams were bad. Both sidelines were bad.
And not both sides. I mean, both sidelines and both the players on the field for both teams. I mean,
yeah.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Terrible.
You know, I think Jimmy Garoppolo is catching a lot of heat for, you know, some of the mistakes, you know, the awful interception that flew over Brandon Ayuk's head, the low throw to George Kittle that looked like it was going to be a fumble. And then, you know, they got bailed out by the replay assist, which is apparently a thing that the NFL has instituted now without telling anyone. I do think that, he's dealing with a thumb injury on his throwing hand.
Right.
I do think that impacts him. It probably says a lot about Trey Lance and the 49ers. But, you know, Jimmy G had the false start on the 4th-and-1 sneak where he's clearly going to pick up the first down. Dak had the now infamous quarterback draw where and my thing on that play, I mean, my thing on that play is Mike McCarthy said, oh, we practice it all the time. You know, we practice this, you know, like once a week. This is, you know,
no, they don't.
We implement. I believe that they do, but I don't think they practice it. I think they, you know, like a little, like, roll the ball out there on the field, tell, you know, line up your defenders on the sidelines and have them, like, standing there, and then Dak sprints, and then the offensive line sprints up behind him. I bet they practice it, but I bet they don't practice it as if, you know, they're not bringing out, you know, Mike McCarthy's uncle and having him pretend to be an old man pretending to be a referee jogging down the field to they haven't dialed it in. I bet they practice it, but I bet they don't actually practice it, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, if they practiced it, they would know that you're not allowed to spot the ball yourself if you're the offense. Otherwise, you would always pick up the first down.
That's what I'm saying. Is that I think yeah, exactly. I think that they're out there, you know, having Dak run the football on these plays. But I don't think, like, you know, that's why Dak handed it to his center. I don't think they're creating a game environment
right,
to actually make it useful. And ultimately, that's why you have poor execution. That's why you have mistakes. That's why you lose the game and that's why it falls on the coaching, because that's your job. Is your job is to prepare the players for these scenarios and to execute. And, you know, I think that they thought, I think in their practices, Dak can sprint 20 yards down the field and the offensive line and the offensive skill guys can catch up to him and get spotted and spike the ball in 14 seconds. But what you don't account for is, you know, the motivation of, you know, actual defensive players. You don't account for, you know, who are seeing this happen in real time. They're unprepared for it, unlike your players. And so Dak maybe gets an extra, he hesitates, he gets an extra couple of yards. You know, you're not accounting for the referees, and you're not accounting for just a bunch of different stuff that, so yeah, you can practice it, but you know, and maybe they do, but I think that's what this, it's just, it's a microcosmic example of Mike McCarthy's, you know, mistakes. And, yeah, and this team was so sloppy, penalties after penalty after penalty.
How many pre-snap penalties? Were there seven? Were there eight? Oh, were there nine pre-snap penalties? By the way, stop complaining about the defensive holding on your running plays when you tackle an offensive lineman.
Yeah, that's just holding, guys.
You're not allowed to do that. Right? Complain it was behind the play. Who cares if it was behind the play? It doesn't make a difference. They call defensive holding. They call defensive holding on the other side of the field all the time. We have, on special teams, we have blocks in the back that have nothing to do with the play. They're all penalties. They're going to get called. It's mind-blowing that Dallas would blame the officials on that.
Dak had a really kind of surprising. You know, he was joking. If you watch the video, it's a little more joking than the quote comes out. But you know, he found out that Cowboys fans weren't throwing trash at the Cowboys players, which would have been insane. They were throwing it at the officials, and Dak was like, "Well, good for them then."
Right.
The officials, started with Jerome Boger. And the disastrous officiating in that Las Vegas game. And there were tons of penalties in San Francisco, Dallas, but they were all, for the most part, perfectly fine penalties. You know, they were
right.
There were lots of flags. It was like if all the flags in the Cincy game were on the refs, all the flags in the Dallas game were on the players.
No question. We'll get to what happened in Cincy, Vegas in a bit. Because I actually didn't have any problem with the way it was adjudicated, but obviously the officials broke a rule, and that's why those officials won't move on. I want to get back to this because I want to talk really quick about McCarthy and Shanahan. The final play was unnecessary. Whether it was the right call or not to pick up another 10 yards, whatever, you didn't need it. That's the thing that I keep getting to. They're at the 40-yard line, right? You are now within range. Frankly, they didn't even need those 10 yards from the 50 to the 40, since Dak can easily throw the ball into the end zone for a Hail Mary from the from midfield. But anyway, you're at the 40-yard line with 14 seconds left. You could have run two plays from the 40. Yeah. You could have either done two Hail Marys, or you could have run like a deep out and gotten the ball even out of bounds, because San Francisco was apparently allowing that to happen. You could have gotten the ball out of bounds at the 20-yard line for the same price. The ball will move through the air faster when not carried by a human being. This is just simple science. Why didn't they figure that out? So to me, that was dumb to even try that play. I didn't have a problem with the McCarthy field goal early in the fourth quarter. I didn't really have a problem with that, because ultimately 16 points is really four scores, because you got to score twice on each possession in order to tie the game.
That's, you know, when you do the math, and it's like, 52% on the 2-point conversions, which means you got a 25% chance of converting both of them, and you got to score two touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think that's, it's probably negligible.
I didn't have a problem with that, but here's what I did have a problem with. When you had the ball outside of the 2-minute warning, that was going to be the drive where you won the game. You can't count on getting the ball back, and they shouldn't have gotten the ball back. So you can't count on getting the ball back. That should have been the drive they won the game. What was the rush before the 2-minute warning to run the play, which clearly they were not ready to run, and they snapped the ball and wasted a down? You didn't need to waste a down. Just take it to the 2-minute warning. You got all three timeouts. You had more than enough time. Heck, they had enough time to not even need a timeout and make San Francisco use all of theirs and win the game in regulation. But this is part of, I keep hearing about, Mike McCarthy and the analytics and whatnot. Man, I don't know what he's doing. I think he's looking at a different sports analytics.
Yeah, I don't think that he is an analyst. I don't think he's necessarily analytical. You know, I don't know if you saw do you remember the quote? So this was floating around on Twitter yesterday, but there had been a story in The Athletic about how Mike McCarthy, when he sat down with Jerry Jones, you know, he told him, he's like, I watched every single snap from the 2019 Cowboys season. And like, first of all, it's like, well, I mean, you want a golf clap?
You want hazard? You want hazard pay?
Yeah, like I watched every snap in the 2019 Cowboys too, I think, buddy. But then he comes back and he tells The Athletic, he's like, yeah, I got to be honest, I actually didn't do that. And he's like, you got to say what you got to say to get the job. It's like, wait, what? You lied to Jerry Jones about watching every, like, you can watch every snap of a Cowboys season on NFL Game Pass in probably a couple. I mean, yeah, it would take, there's 16 games, right? Because they go to the playoffs, obviously, because they play their coach. 16 games. You can watch them in 45 minutes. I mean, 720 minutes is what? Divided by 60. And that's 12 hours. Like, you can bang that out in a couple days.
Yeah.
And especially if you don't have a job and you're rich and you're trying to get a football, you're trying to get a job with a football team, you can bang it out in a day.
Yeah.
And maybe, and definitely two. So, like, that's, again, like, sort of a microcosm thing where it's like, you didn't? You really didn't watch all the snaps? Like, why would you not do that if you're trying to get that job? Mike McCarthy's a probably a great human.
Yeah.
And, you know, a good parent, you know, great husband. I think he's a good coach. But I think that he's a – maybe a good I don't think he's a good coach.
He's certainly not good enough to take a roster like they've got and take them to where – I mean, that's a talented team. That is a very talented team.
Well, did you hear what Jerry Jones said afterwards?
No.
He goes, you can't have the type of talent that we have and end up with the results. He's basically like, he said, I think we've got one of the most talented rosters in all of football. And I think that's why there's a decent chance that, you know, he ends up moving on from Mike McCarthy. It's entirely possible that it's more of a Dan Quinn / Kellen Moore. And Kellen Moore's sort of getting off easy on this too, but Dan Quinn, Kellen Moore are getting job offers and Jerry's panicking at the thought of losing one of those guys, given the turnaround for the defense, and given that, you know, he just has this obsession with coaches and players that he accidentally finds, like Kellen Moore and Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott, Tony Romo, I think if one or both of those guys is getting a look and gets a job offer, you know, they'll probably come to Jerry and tell him, and then I think Jerry will absolutely consider firing Mike McCarthy and bumping one of those guys up to Cowboys coach if they're willing to do that.
All right, Will Brinson, did the Buffalo Bills rub Bill Belichick and the Patriots collective nose in it with already a 40-10 lead midway through the fourth quarter, throwing a touchdown pass to an offensive lineman?
No doubt about it. I mean, that was a 20-year flex on them move by the Bills. And look, I mean, sometimes you got to do that. You know, sometimes you got to exercise those demons, right? By exercising your muscle on an opponent. And I mean, if you're the Bills, they've got a couple wins over Tom Brady, you know, like bizarre regular season victories. But you've been kicked. You've been down and out and kicked over and over and over and over again by the New England Patriots and by Tom Brady and by Bill Belichick. And, you know, we thought that they had the upper hand coming into this year. Certainly, you know, last year, like they did this last year on Monday Night Football in the regular season. I mean, they were running the score up on Belichick to clinch the division, or maybe they'd already clinched it in New England on Monday night. And so I think there is definitely, and then we saw it with the win game earlier this year, Sean McDermott became almost unhinged over the next 3 weeks. He was crying at halftime the following week because they were losing to Tom Brady and the Bucks, and he's like too emotional for words when trying to talk to Tracy Wilson, which is just bizarre. And I think the Buffalo Bills have put a lot into dethroning the Patriots and treating the Patriots as a you know, the boogeyman, the they got to take him out. It's very, very similar to Michael Jordan, the Bulls, and the Pistons
right
back in the Eastern Conference.
I don't think there's any question about it. Look, I think Buffalo – I said this at the start of the playoffs. I think if everybody plays their best, Buffalo's the best team in the AFC. That's just the way I've looked at the Bills this year. I think their high is better, even better than Kansas City's high, because I think their defense can be exceptional. It was obviously – very good. To me, this game, though, was about Josh Allen shoving. As they say, when pitchers just throw fastballs past the lineup, this was a Josh Allen game for me. They did a lot of other good things, but Allen was exceptional, I thought.
Yeah, sorry. Robbie Brinson.
Shout to Robbie. Shout out to Robbie.
You want to say hey to Mr. Adam?
No, he doesn't.
Hi.
Hey. All right, great. We've had a Robbie Brinson sighting. Excellent. I wish we had TV for that.
I know. He's in skeleton pajamas.
So beautiful.
I don't know how that would work.
No, that'd be great.
Am I. No, I mean, look, me too. Josh Allen has the, you know, this sounds kind of insane, especially to what we saw on Sunday night. But I mean, Josh Allen might have a higher ceiling than even Patrick Mahomes, just from a, you know, game to game. He's has an equal ceiling to Patrick Mahomes on a game to game level. And if Josh Allen puts together four games like he played against New England, and that's entirely possible. I mean, dudes get hot. You know?
Yeah.
Like players get hot. If he puts together four games like he did against New England, then the Bills are probably going to win the Super Bowl.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask it this way. Because I think that Patrick Mahomes reminds me of he's a younger version of Aaron Rodgers. And I think Josh Allen reminds me of John Elway. So who is better, the best of Rodgers or the best of Elway, which I think is a fair question.
Sure. I think the Rodgers thing is a very good comparison for Mahomes. I just did Dave Damashek's podcast, the -3 podcast.
Sure.
And Sheck and I were talking about this exact same topic. And Sheck had said this a while back, and I think it's a great you know, blend comp. But Josh Allen is basically Ben Roethlisberger plus Cam Newton, which is, you know, absolutely terrifying.
Well, I kind of think that's John Elway, though.
Sure, maybe. But I guess so. But I feel like even Elway – Josh Allen's like bigger than Elway,
right?
Josh Allen, I think he is, maybe not. Elway, incredible. Yeah, I agree. Like the running, the ability to, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're the same size, but I agree with you. I think Allen, because of his rushing ability, is just completely different than anything else you have from really any other quarterback. His combination of passing and rushing, you know, because like Cam in the open field, you know, he's going to go for the pylon. You know,
right.
Josh Allen is, you know, Patrick Mahomes is going to slide. I mean, he'll dive if it's a, you know, must win. You know, like if you're trailing by three or something, or trailing by four, and you need the touchdown, you know, he'll fly into a pile. He's not scared, but you know, physically, he can't just plow through people. Josh Allen can run people over.
Absolutely, so no question.
I think the upside of Allen, if everything's clicking, is a little bit higher just because of that rushing ability.
Yeah, look, I think Buffalo is excellent. Real quick before we take our last break, and we'll come back with last call, because this question was posed after the Eagles showed to be way, way inferior to the Buccaneers, and Jalen Hurts showed a lot of the warts that we'd all kind of thought were there. And people wanted to know why Jalen Hurts and Mac Jones are talked about differently. My feeling, and I didn't get engaged in this on Twitter, but I did think about it because I think it's a fascinating conversation. Because I think the jury is still out on Mac Jones as a bona fide franchise quarterback. And I think I like some of the things I see from Jalen Hurts, but he's not very accurate. And he was late on a bunch of throws, and his deep ball looked very, very subpar to me. And I think Philadelphia's got three first-round picks, and I just wonder, is Philly going to take one of their first-round picks and spend it on a quarterback?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, with Jalen Hurts, part of the problem from a psychological standpoint when we evaluate him is that we have a lot of experience with Jalen Hurts as a player, even if it's not in the NFL, because he, you know, played at Alabama, transfers to Oklahoma. I mean, these games are on TV a lot, right? We've seen a lot of Jalen Hurts. And so now he's in Philadelphia. He's part of the whole Wentz saga. You know, plays half the season last year, plays a full season this year. I think that we just feel like it sort of feels like maybe we've seen his ceiling just because we've seen so much of him. Although, and that's not fair to a young player who's still developing as an NFL quarterback. But I agree with you. I think, you know, part of, and he's injured foot, you know, might require surgery. You know, that's a bit of a built-in excuse for the poor performance yesterday. But you know, he just missed passes downfield that as an NFL quarterback you have to be able to make. And you know, like Mac Jones, to me, in that game against Buffalo, I thought he played really well. I thought he came out and was prepared, and he was maybe the Patriots' best player, honestly. And the first interception on that first drive, I don't know if the game changes, but like Josh Allen on his touchdown throw was trying to throw it away. It was walking off the field for expecting a field goal, and Dawson Knox somehow snagged it. And then, you know, Mac Jones goes down the field and, you know, throws a pretty good deep ball that's going to land in the breadbasket, and Micah Hyde just makes a great play. And so if it's, you know, 7-3 Patriots at that point, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the Bills still blow them out. They probably do. But I think that putting Mac Jones and Jalen Hurts, it's tough to evaluate those two young quarterbacks in the spot they're in when they're trailing to elite offenses that kept their foot on the gas, because those two teams were not built to – they were built to play with a lead and built to run downhill on you. They weren't built to try and come back. But, yeah, I mean, I think there are lots of questions about Hurts. If I had to guess now, I would say the Eagles don't spend a first-round pick on a quarterback. But, you know, certainly if they fall in love with a Kenny Pickett or somebody, they could.
We're talking with Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com. Prevailing thought on Twitter yesterday was that we clearly did not need the expanded playoffs because the seventh team in each conference was shellacked. Clearly, Philadelphia didn't really belong. Clearly, Pittsburgh got in because the Chargers don't really know how to win games yet. And a lot of other things happened. I mean, it was just a weird year. I would actually submit that in a normal and a non-COVID season, we probably would have had two other teams in there. But regardless, it doesn't matter. People were complaining about that. Nobody's complaining about the fact that we didn't really need a 17th game. But that's okay.
I was fine with the way things were, with 16 games and six playoff teams on each side of the bracket.
Right,
it's a lot easier. I think it rewards, the division, the each conference more fairly with the two byes. And you know, they're probably gonna get the, you know, eight teams eventually, because these playoff games are just, you know, they're gonna get the 18 games and eight playoff teams. I know it's too many, but you know what, like. I mean, I don't mind. I don't care about watching Steelers Chiefs. I mean, it wasn't a good game. It was a blowout, but it was fun for the first, you know, quarter and a half. And then, what's the worst thing that happened? Patrick Mahomes goes supernova and scores five touchdowns in 11 minutes.
I'm with you.
Yeah, like that's fun. You're not going to hear me complain about too much football, even bad games. The only games, I guess the Bills game was a blowout too, but like. You know, by and large, I mean, the games were entertaining, at least for narrative reasons, and watching great football players put on great performances or close, crazy games.
Yeah, and the truth is that they would have complained about Patriots-Bills. Had right? I mean, or they didn't complain about it. That would have been in the playoffs, too, and that was a blowout. We, frankly, only had one close game. Am I wrong? Actually, 49ers-Cowboys is obviously close.
Chiefs-Bengals and 49ers-Cowboys is close. Yeah, so we had two close games. I will say, too, that you know, a lot of times, you know, people get all up in arms about when a round of the playoffs is not exciting. Every game's not thrilling. But usually what happens is if you have a great wild card weekend, sometimes the division round is a little bit of a letdown. And usually when the wild card round is a little bit of a letdown, the division round ends up being great. And I would submit that with the matchups that we've got, because you're going to get either – like the worst quarterback that you're going to get is Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yes.
in these divisional rounds, you know. And then after that, it's like Ryan Tannehill, and then like Kyler Murray, Matthew Stafford. They're going to be four really, really good, or every six, whatever it is.
Eight.
There's every eight matchups. Yeah, it's 42 matchups. There are really, really good matchups coming in the divisional round, I think.
No question about it. All right, hopefully LA can overcome Matthew Stafford so we can see that. Really, 15 or so seconds on this. When was the last time a team had this much pressure? I mean, this is a lot of pressure on the Rams because they went all in on this year.
Yeah. I don't know.
Right.
That's your 15-second answer. I don't remember when there was this much pressure on I don't know that it said that much pressure. I mean, if you lose this game, it is an extremely disappointing season, I think. But I guess the Cardinals have some pressure too. But the Rams certainly all in on this year. And if they lose this game, it would be considered a massive disappointment.
All right, let's go through the three games that we know in the last minute that we have. Cincinnati will start us off at Tennessee, 4:30 on Saturday. The Bengals are a 3.5-point underdog at Tennessee.
The line going from 2.5 to 3.5 is certainly eyebrow raising. I want to back the Bengals. I don't want to bet against Joe Burrow. I've got a lot of Joe Burrow futures and playoff DFS, playoff fantasy stuff. So I'm high. I mean, I love Joe Burrow. I think he's clutching these big games. But the Bengals just put Larry Ogunjobi, UNC Charlottetown, defensive tackle, on IR, and they were down to their backup defensive lineman, and Derrick Henry's coming back. There is a chance that this is just an unfortunately timed matchup problem for the Cincinnati Bengals.
All right, I like Cincinnati to win the game. Real quick, San Fran at Green Bay, 5.5 points too much for the Packers to lay.
Oh yeah, I took San Francisco last night. This is Aaron Rodgers, awesome. Matt LaFleur, awesome. Devontae Adams, incredible. This is a bad matchup for the Packers. The 49ers have dominated them, and the run game is very dangerous against the Packers, who can't really stop them.
All right, just give me a winner. Buffalo at Kansas City.
Buffalo.
I agree. Will Brinson, you're the best, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. See ya.
You're listening to The Adam Gold Show on the North Carolina Sports Network.